Welcome to Portland Eye and Ear Control, a podcast brought to you by the Creative Music Guild. I'm Ben Cates, the Artistic Director for the CMG. My co-host is Brandon Conway, our Board President, Operations Director, and Recording Engineer for this podcast.
Today we talk to Doug Dietrich, a fantastic trumpet and cornet player, a nonprofit consultant, and the Executive Director of the PJCE. We have a conversation that covers a lot of ground, including...
Well, my answer to that question is that I'm not totally satisfied with how I'm handling it at the moment.
Donate to the CMG and find out more about our shows at www.creativemusicguild.org.
Okay, let's talk to Doug.
Real quick, I just want to apologize for something in this podcast. Ben's microphone had quite a bit of hiss in it, and... did what I could to try to get rid of it. I think it's better, although at times he sounds a little bit like a robot. So sorry about that. Also, sorry we had to cut out Doug's plugs of his upcoming gigs because we're really late on putting this out. So sorry about that, Doug. I think you guys will still enjoy the conversation. So let's get back to it. Thanks.
Anyway. Yeah, so we should get going. So a part of what's fun about this for me is like people who I wish I knew better. Now I get to like just like now you just have to tell me about yourself.
Right.
So tell us about yourself. So you moved back not too long ago.
Yeah, about a year ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I guess it'd be maybe interesting to start with, where were you? Why were you not here? Why have you come back?
Yeah. Well, until about a year ago, I was living in... Well, I usually say New York, although I only lived in the city for about 1 year of those 3 years that I was in New York. But I lived in the Bronx for about a year, and then we moved to New Rochelle, New York, which is a little bit further north. I lived there for about 2 years. And while I was there, I was playing some trumpet, composing a lot, and I was also working for the Festival of New Trumpet Music a bit as a volunteer. Which is Dave Douglas's kind of any new music involving the trumpet at all, and sometimes any brass instrument was what that was about. So it was kind of a good way to get my feet wet with some organizing work, and I met a lot of great people and saw some really great music, and yeah, and then we decided to leave New York because we, being my wife and I, we decided to come back here because I grew up around Portland, and then we had our first son, and we're now pregnant with our second a daughter.
Congratulations!
So, yeah, thank you.
Exciting.
So we wanted to be here because this is where we wanted to raise our family. So, Portland, you know, has this great kind of sweet spot of like being a very family friendly place, but also a very arts friendly place for the most part. There are some ways that it's not because it's gotten very expensive, and that causes big problems for artists when we're talking about space. Becomes a big issue, and we've talked about that before, but well, before we started recording, we talked about that. But
we should mention, this podcast is brought to you, is powered by Mothership Music.
Oh, that's right.
Literally, yeah. We had to get a power adapter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, from Mothership Music. So there cool. You go.
Check them out on Beach and MLK.
Yeah.
So that's exciting, though. Second child, I'm stuck on that. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. May I ask when?
The end of April is the due date. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of now enjoying like I'll use the word sweet spot again, because it kind of is like it's before we're really getting into the big third trimester things with the pregnancy. But yet our son, who's now not quite 2 years old, kind of in a really nice place in terms of, like, he sleeps through the night most of the time, and he's talking a lot more and learning stuff so quickly now. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of just enjoying this time of we get to sleep a little bit more, and we're really enjoying watching him grow really fast. Is kind of that's where we are right now. So we have a few more months of that, and then we're of what I'm calling the sweet spot of, you know, not being in the dark depths of the third trimester with Jenny just being very uncomfortable and going to the doctor all the time, and then of course having a newborn will end any sweet spot, but you know, we're looking forward to it. So it'll be, you know, having a toddler and a newborn at the same time will be a big deal for me, you know, as an artist for sure, but you know, us as a family too, it'll be a really big deal. Mm-hmm. I can't think of another way to put it, but it'll definitely be that. Yeah, I mean, that's easy.
Track a little bit.
I was thinking about being a parent and a musician, which mm-hmm. we all are.
Yeah,
and how to thread that needle. And I, you know, none of us being full-time musicians. I mean, because you do other stuff, mm-hmm. right? For
I do.
Yeah. So, but trying to fit in. I mean, how are you doing it now? And what are you thinking about?
I'm not
in April.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think for anyone that wants to have a family and is interested in having a family, and not everyone is, and not everyone has to be, and I'm not saying that everybody does, because I hate it when people get that way. But for people that are, it's just like the $1 million question, and it's. I mean, from my experience of it, is it's very hard to answer. But I will say that. Well, my answer to that question is that I'm not totally satisfied with how I'm handling it at the moment, but. Ben and I were talking before we started taping about keeping data on ourselves. So Ben has a spreadsheet. I use this, it's an online like time clock tool. It's called Toggle, and there are probably gajillions of other ones out there, but so I literally like keep a clock, like when I'm practicing. I have a category for practice, and then I actually have a category for email, which is horrible, but it's like I have to do that, otherwise like nothing will happen, because that's just the way things work these days.
So that's so, for managing how much time you spend on mm-hmm. kind of each of these categories, and then you have sort of an ideal budget for these categories.
Well, I have the things that are hard that are fixed, like my day job is a fixed amount of time. However, I'm lucky. I work for a web development company, and we do everything remotely, so I can pretty much work when I want. However, it can be whenever I want, and it ends up getting spread out through the day I start my day at 7, and then I go 7 till 4, and that's the work day, and the day job always fits into that time. Mm-hmm. And I'm also lucky. I don't work full-time. I don't work 40 hours a week for that job, but let's see. I feel like I'm getting off track, but so I do that. I mean, that's actually been a big deal. I think of, like, just actually knowing to the second how much time I actually spent doing something, as long as I don't forget to turn off the clock when I got distracted by a screaming toddler or for whatever reason. But that's actually like I've only been doing this for a few weeks now, so check with me again in 6 months. But
yeah,
we were talking a little bit about you sort of turning to the cornet, and so maybe I don't know, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about like where you started with music. When you started playing, what kind of music you're most interested in playing now, and
sure.
So a little bit of history.
Okay. So I took some piano lessons before I learned I started playing the trumpet, but basically where I, and that, but that was only for about a year. So where I really learned music was in the public school band system.
Yeah. When did you start? Like what grade?
Sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think after, you know, after a few months, I did start taking some trumpet lessons. You know, so, you know, you start taking lessons and you, I did practice some, you know, at that time. So I started to get better, and it just got to be more and more something that I was really getting more serious about. And by kind of the middle of high school, I started to, you know, I quit sports to play music because I felt like that was something that was a lot more interesting to me. So,
were you playing at that point other things besides school band, or was that you were just getting very into that?
Yeah, about that time is when I did. Mm-hmm. So then I had a kind of a, I had a band in high school that was like, I mean, more or less a, like a jazz band instrumentation, but it was kind of like we played kind of more jam band music. So, and so I said, that's when I first started writing songs, was for that group. I was kind of a leader of the group. At least I was the music director, I would say. Like I wrote most of the music and the arrangements, and I, ran rehearsals, for the most part. I mean, I think I was, they would probably all agree that I was the leader, although, you know, I didn't say it. Although I was not the front man. We had a front man who was very good at that. And he'll definitely listen to that, and he knows who he is. let's see. So, yeah. I mean, I think that... so kind of halfway through high school and kind of getting to the end was where I was like, yeah, this is probably what I want to do for the rest of my life. I mean, I didn't know, I had no idea what that would look like, and I had no idea if I would be successful, and I didn't really even know what that meant. I mean, what it meant to me to be successful, or, but I think even like, I don't know, I guess my only vision was probably Miles Davis. Like I was like, okay, Miles Davis, that's success. So, you know, so I started, I went to college, which Miles Davis did not do, but we live in a different, much different time now. Yeah, I went to college. I went to Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. I did a trumpet degree. I played a lot of jazz, but I did get interested there in kind of a lot of other music as well, like, you know, doing non-jazz improvisation, and playing jazz, but, you know, playing very freely was a thing. I started composing chamber music there, and that was probably one of the best things I could have done with myself at that point.
Why?
Well, that's a good question. It really opened up my ears a lot, I think. I think that, you know, in jazz, there are a lot of great composers, but I feel like in chamber music, you know, it's like it's generally expected that you're not a performer, or that you won't be performing your own music. Mm-hmm. It's far more rare to have a composer-performer who's a very good composer. It's just a lot more rare, mm-hmm. I think, because the skill sets are really different. Like you're, well, I mean, one thing that I did find in that, in music school, like, unless you're a composer, being creative is pretty far down the list in terms of the priorities of like what you're being taught. So like as a trumpet major, I was learning orchestral excerpts and I was learning how to play the trumpet and how to read music and, you know, just kind of working skills you need to be a trumpet player, more or less. And so that's what you do. It's not really about being creative. Like being creative is kind of after all that, maybe you'll be creative, but it really doesn't matter that much to get a trumpet degree, like a trumpet performance degree. It's not a trumpet creativity degree. I mean, even, and that's even in, it's less true in jazz, which is what drew me to jazz to begin with, is that I could make my own music. It would be okay to write my own music. It'd be okay to play my own way, more or less.
There's definitely more of an emphasis on like individualism, at least in jazz, even if it's not about composing. And there's still sort of that, you know, you seek out your own voice and that your own tone, sort of, and your own style, and which is kind of more in line with that creative self-expression or something.
But I mean, it's so, I guess why, you know, what was good about writing chamber music is that it gave me a broader idea of structure, I think, of like, and not just musical structure, but also the structure of working with people, working with other people, working together as a group, and also working with performers as a composer, because it's, you know, you can't show them how you want it to be played because you don't play the viola. You don't play percussion or you don't play the clarinet. It's like you have to, you give them a good score and then you tell them what you can, but you're giving it to them. And having that experience, you know, you have that in jazz too, but I think it's different because it's, I don't know. Hard to say, but I think it was just that the idea of structure is very interesting to me in terms of like how you're working with people and how people work together and what they can achieve together versus what they can achieve on their own.
But I think it must be a fun part of sort of, because you work in a couple different contexts where you're sort of either the main composer or one composer in a group, where there's probably I imagine a little bit more of an organic process to achieving the music sometimes.
I mean, I think that's an important, that kind of made me think about something where and kind of bringing it back to like kind of even more freer music that kind of the CMG is, you know, more of a proponent of. I feel like that process applies to yourself as well, just because you, so this process of like being okay with what happens, more than comparing that to, you know, this ideal version that you had in your head when you were either composing or something, or just imagining how you would improvise in a certain situation in a certain way. I mean, it never goes the way you imagined. Even if you've written every single note, it doesn't go the way quite the way you really thought it would. And even your own playing is going to be that way, and even more so as an improviser, I think, which is kind of like, I think that process of kind of being okay with the weird things that you do on your own, just because that's the way your kind of head and your body naturally, you know, kind of lead you in certain directions. And so you have to kind of be okay with that. And that's taken a long time for me. It's still an ongoing thing, as I'm sure it is for anybody. But I think that being a composer and working with performers helped me get there maybe a little faster, even. Being like, oh no, this certain thing here is a strength and this other thing is a weakness. And, you know, maybe that's something to work on in practice, but at the same time, it's also, you know, I can just let that thing go that I'm horrible at doing. I don't need to worry about that. I can let the people that are good at that, they can do that, and I don't need to think I have to do everything. Yeah. I think it was a big deal, and I think writing music for other people is a good way to learn about your own tendencies, I guess. So I think it was good for me in that way. To learn to work with people, learn to work with myself in that same way, try to apply those same lessons to myself. I think that was important too. Yeah.
Cool. So that was undergrad. And then did you come back to Portland after that?
Almost. Or? I came back to Eugene.
Okay.
So I did a master's in jazz studies at the University of Oregon. I worked a lot with Steve Owen and Brian McWhorter. And both of them, I think, are just awesome. Great. I had a really great experience with both of them. And I definitely recommend that school to anyone who wants school. I did, it's a 2-year program. I was a graduate teaching fellow as well. It was also a great experience of working with groups. And when you're working with students, like you know, you're not only are you accepting somebody else's opinion of how a piece goes, but you're also accepting that they are not playing at a professional level, but that they're not even trying to play at a high level, you know, that they don't really care that much. They're more here to just have fun. And if they play well at this, you know, that's just icing. So that was interesting. Yeah. But after I finished there, I stayed around in Eugene for about 2 years. That was a great time. That was the first time I started doing organizing work. I started volunteering at concerts for it's the Willamette Jazz Society is a group that promotes jazz in Eugene, and they have a venue called the Jazz Station, which still is there, and it's actually a fantastic place to play in Eugene. And so I started volunteering at their concerts, and then eventually I joined their board. I was on the board for about 2 years until we decided to leave for New York. I guess it was during that time I formed my, depending on who I'm talking to, I call it either an improvising chamber ensemble or I call it a chamber jazz ensemble. Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of been my main pursuit over the last 6 years or so. It's called Any When Ensemble. And that's when I started that group, and it was my master's thesis, all the music I wrote for that group and that we performed. It was my master's project. So we did that. And then after that, that summer, we went on a tour all the way as far south as LA and up to Seattle. And we did like 7 or 8 concerts. And it was kind of just like, oh, we have this music, let's play it a little bit more. And then it was like, oh, we really like this, so let's keep doing it. So we've kept going. We have continued, yeah.
So that was before. I was going to say that was before you went to New York.
That was before I went to New York. Yeah. Okay.
So then you ditched them.
Well, you know, the funny thing was that we all did start in Eugene together, but not very quickly, but within that 2 year time, we had already spread out kind of all over the country. So now we have one member in New York, one in Boston, and then 3 in different cities in Oregon. So we have Portland, Eugene, and Corvallis too. So it makes things really difficult. We don't get together very often. We don't play much. We go on a couple tours a year, and that's kind of what we do. And that's been, it's been working. I mean, it wouldn't have, I think it would have kind of just faded away, in the last couple of years. But we won the New Jazz Works grant, which is from Chamber Music America, it commissioned a brand new piece from that group that we put out on a record this year. It's called The Bright and Rushing World. Just a little plug there. And he's holding up the CD. So we got that grant. It allowed, you know, it paid for about 3/4 of the costs of recording the whole album, which is a huge deal. Opened a lot of doors, and I think it kind of gave us a lot of credibility that we didn't have. And so now we've, you know, the way that band has been kind of moving forward is a lot of times we have a college residency that's kind of, you know, making everything work in terms of the finances of it, because it gets pretty expensive to fly people, you know, across the country.
Yeah.
So you all just did like a Midwest thing, right? So was did you all meet up and rehearse for a while and then did the tour?
Yeah.
That's not cheap, because everybody's got to fly in and stay someplace and then rehearse somewhere
and
then hit the road. But it worked. You did it.
It did work out. Yeah.
So you do a couple nights at a college and then go to a different university, or is it like longer term?
Well, sort of thing? The way it's been working out is we usually spend like a full day, you know, we'll teach all day and then play a concert at night. Mm-hmm. But this one, we just played on a music series at Ripon College, which is in Ripon, Wisconsin. You know, It's in, you know, rural Wisconsin. It's beautiful. And then we drove. So we all flew to Chicago and had a couple hours of rehearsal. And then, and this was learning a new piece and playing some older music too. So mostly older music that we'd already knew, you know, so we didn't have to do the, like, a huge rehearsal process, but, you know, we did still have to learn a new piece, yeah. Which is just like, it's insane, but that's how we have to work. So, you know, everybody gets to Chicago, and actually the cellist, she was taking, she had had a gig in rural Virginia at a, like, a really small, I believe a men's Christian college. I don't remember the name of it, but so she got to Richmond and took a train from Richmond to Chicago. Oof. Which is like it's a 24-hour journey. Yeah, yeah. So, but in the middle of the night, over her night, two guys got in a fight. So they had to stop the train in outside of Toledo, Ohio. And, you know, the local police came and took these guys away. Yeah. And then they had to wait. And then by that time, they were behind the schedule and they couldn't go. So they had to be put on a bus and go on a bus all the way to Chicago. So it's like, wow. So we're like subject to all those, that kind of thing, which is just like unbelievable. It's tough. So she missed the rehearsal.
Oh, right.
It was like, you know, we taped a rehearsal and she listened to it and we were fine, but it was like, it was just crazy. So yeah, that's how it works. It's nuts. But we have another residency. We're going to Lebanon Valley College, which is in Annville, Pennsylvania. And we're doing 2 days there, like a kind of a day of rehearsal and kind of open rehearsal, and then a concert, and then we teach all day the next day, which would be really fun. Looking forward to it. Playing some music by students and a piece by a faculty member, Justin Morrell, who's a really amazing guitar player and great composer, who wrote a very hard piece for us that I've been working on for a while. I hope he's listening. Because it's just hard, so I've been working on it. And then we're playing a concert. We go to Washington D.C. and we're playing at the Phillips Collection, which is a it was the first modern art museum in the country. So it's, you know, pretty old, but they have a really kind of amazing music series there. That's generally, you know, traditional classical chamber music, but they do have some newer music and more adventurous things, so we're definitely the adventure group, maybe for the whole season. I haven't looked to see well. They usually have a few like pretty adventurous things, you know, adventurous compared to Mozart, you know, who I love, but you know, certainly what I do is not Mozart. So.
So you have Anyone, and you perform with and compose for PJC for.
I do, yeah.
Yeah. And executive direct PJC.
Yes, I do executive direct. Uh-huh. So I'm the executive director of the Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and it's a nonprofit organization that runs a 12-member jazz ensemble. That this is the pitch. It's like
perfect. Pitch. Yeah. I got the CMG one.
So we commission music from mostly Portland-based composers and. A few special guests from further afield and from around Oregon, Salem and Eugene and Corvallis. So, so I'm the executive director. We have that group right now has 3 concerts per year. We do kind of like it's all new music. So it's very, you know, for 12 people. So it's kind of, it's always a big deal. There's a lot of work that goes into it and fundraising all year round and a lot of administrative work. So I do and we also run a record label. So PJCE Records releases music by Portland small groups that, you know, it's all original music again. That's really the core of our mission, is just promoting new jazz music in Portland. And
been pretty prolific, the record label.
Yeah, it started out. That's kind of interesting because
like insanely prolific, like one a month,
like unbelievably
for a little while.
They did a whole year, most of a year, doing a record every month, which can be done, but like it's hard to do anything else if you're doing that. Yeah. And for a mostly volunteer staff, we found that Well, I mean, it was Dan Duval was doing all that work, who's a great guitar player, really great writer, and good guy all around. Mm. But he wanted to, I mean, he quit after a year because it was so much work that he couldn't keep up. So,
yeah, of course not.
So kind of the new plan with that is that we're probably only doing 3 releases this season. And we're trying, we've kind of revamped the program. I worked a lot with Lee Elderton, who's the new director of that program. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of just redid it so that we're trying to do a little more for the artists. Just trying to make the release a little bit, a bit bigger of a deal, I guess, you know, that we're trying to impact the artist's career a little bit more, actually. And so that's, and it's been cool. I mean, I think we're most of the way through the first one, so I can kind of report later how it's going, but I think.
Putting more like into like a release party maybe, and like into the distribution, is that kind of what you're?
Yeah, I mean, we're still going with a pretty simple distribution model. I mean, we're doing a very limited run of CDs, and then we're doing digital distribution with CD Baby, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty lightweight in terms of that. But then we do all the physical distribution, so we do all the fulfillment for any orders that we get. We started helping them, helping the artists put on an event. So the pianist Mark Simon did a CD release concert this year, and in November went really, really well. I had a good audience, and you know, sold a bunch of CDs. You know, went well, and then we're also we're going to be kind of advocating for the artists mostly to educators, kind of around the region. So throughout Oregon and into Washington, to be like, hey, there's this great artist, and he put out this CD, and here's what it sounds like, and this is what they can do as teachers.
Yeah, trying to get workshop gigs kind of for people. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, so we're really looking forward to that. I think that, you know, the PJCE Records artists, you know, I think they're bringing a lot of creativity to jazz music that... students will benefit a lot from, I think, you know, just hearing new music. A lot of times they don't really think of it that way, you know? I mean, there's not so much emphasis on it. It's, you know, like if you're in a big band at high school, you're never going to meet any of the people that write the music.
Yeah.
So like if they can, meet one of these composer performers who, you know, also plays piano or also plays saxophone or whatever, I think there's a lot of value in that, and we're hoping to tell more of the educators around that these people are available to do it. So, mm-hmm. So that's the other big thing.
That's great. Yeah.
So, DouglasDietrich.com.
That's correct.
And what's your Twitter?
At Douglas Dietrich.
Yeah. Douglas Dietrich. And anything else?
DouglasDietrich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, AnyoneEnsemble.com. If anyone is curious about learning more about Anyone Ensemble. I'm hoping that the group will come to Portland next season. Knock on wood. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'm working on it.
And PJCE is it PJCE?
PJCE.org.
.org.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to be launching a new website pretty soon, so that's pretty exciting.
And the records, is that on that same website?
It will be. Right now the record label is at pjcerecords.org.
Okay.
So you can find the whole catalog there. Or pjce.bandcamp.com is where you actually buy the albums. And you can also stream all of them. Oh. And so it's really great. I know that we're coming out with 2 more records later this year. And again, you have to ask Lee because he's masterminding those projects. But the one we did come out with this year so far, this winter, was by pianist Mark Simon. It's called Inkling. And, you know, all original tunes by Mark. You know, a very kind of classic straight-ahead jazz album, mm-hmm. Which was kind of sadly lacking on the catalog. And so we're glad to have something in that vein a little bit more. It kind of rounds out the collection a little bit more, I think, in a really nice way. So, cool. So that album's doing well, and so
awesome.
That's pretty much everything that's going on. And then all the rehearsals for all of that, and all the traveling, and It's going to be crazy, but, you know, again, all stuff I'm really looking forward to. And hopefully performing with Nora, doing that kind of a live performance version of the music that will be the podcast. But we're going to be in the studio to record the, and by studio, I mean my, probably my basement or her or her living room. Yeah, anyway, so that's what we're doing there. So, yeah, so that's all that's coming up for me. And then in between, just lots of emails. So, you know how that is.
I do.
So, yeah, I know you do.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks, Doug.
Yeah, cool. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to Portland Eye on Ear Control, a podcast brought to you by the Creative Music Guild. The Creative Music Guild is an all-volunteer, nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting and promoting experimental music in Portland, Oregon. Check us out online at creativemusicguild.org, also on Twitter, also on Facebook, and Instagram, and YouTube, and SoundCloud.